Wild Time. The Animal Rights / World Conservation Show on 106.8 TCR-FM.
TCR-FM.
Some listeners may find the contents of this show disturbing. Parental discretion is advised.
Hey. You are listening to Wild Time, the Animal Rights / World Conservation Show with myself, Thomas Janak, here on TCR-FM. And if you think this guy has such a sexy voice, then that's true. But I only have the sexy voice because I'm recovering from a chesty cuff. So it sort of makes me sound like, you know, someone else, but it's me. And I was just warning my guest today, because usually I do all the talking. It's kind of a monologue that I do, really. Today won't be like this. I'm joined via Skype by Kathy Archibald. And, you know, you hear all us animal rights people saying all the time animal testing is scientific fraud, or some people do not go that far, but they say, you know, animal testing is virtually useless. We know that flipping a coin is more accurate. And a lot of people agree on it. But if we say it, you know, that's what you would expect in an animal rights guy. But I have someone that says it herself. And she's involved in a thing called the Safer Medicines Campaign. And that basically means getting away from testing on animals, because we're just not the same anatomically. Kathy, tell us a bit about, you're very welcome to the program, tell us a bit about how did this campaign come about, and who are you guys?
Okay, well, thank you for that introduction. And yes, I'm Kathy Archibald. I'm the director of Safer Medicines Campaign, and we have an educational wing as well, which is a charity called Safer Medicines Trust. And we're not an animal rights organisation at all. We're a patient safety organisation, an independent group of doctors and scientists. But I hope, as you've said, your listeners will be interested.
Yeah, and the good thing is, over the last sort of couple of I'm doing the show for 3 years, and oftentimes, you know, we're not only talking to the converted these days.
Excellent.
So there's more and more people that are interested, because, you know, it took me a while to go vegan.
Right.
I never considered myself being an animal rights activist, and then all of a sudden people gave me that name. Oh yeah, you're an animal rights activist, because my show, the idea was in the beginning, was an animal welfare show. It just turned into an animal rights show. And these days I'm quite comfortable with the term, you know.
Sure. Okay. Well, that's excellent. But our concern, our organisation, as I say, we're a patient safety organisation, but our concern is with animal tests and whether today they are the best way to protect patients from dangerous medicines, because at the moment the government in every country in the world requires that new medicines are tested for safety on animals before they can ever be tested on volunteers and patients in human clinical trials. And that has been the legally required safety screen in the UK since 1968. That was in the wake of thalidomide. And your viewers over about 45 will all have heard of thalidomide. Younger people may not have done, but it was a really common drug that was prescribed to millions of women in the late 50s and early 60s to pregnant women to help.
We were calling it, we called it Contagan in Germany.
And that's right, yes. It was first developed in Germany by
companies. They were basically born sort of misformed.
That's right.
Very short arms, and I remember
that. That's it, exactly, yes. A strange condition called phocomelia, which hadn't been seen before, and babies were born without arms or legs, or with very truncated arms and or legs. And about 10,000 affected babies were born worldwide. Many babies died at birth or before birth as well, but there were 10,000 babies born with serious defects, and all of the survivors now are turning 50, and they're having extreme problems to put up with. I mean, they always have had, but as they age, a lot of these problems are getting more and more serious. Mm. And they've never had proper compensation or help. And it's good that about a year ago, the UK government finally got round to apologising and promised some more help and some more.
I mean, they should compensate rather than just talk. and say we're sorry.
Absolutely. And we're extremely lucky to have a wonderful patron of our organisation called Matt Fraser. He's a thalidomider. He's a well-known actor, and he's absolutely tremendous, an outspoken spokesperson for us. If you have a look at our website, you'll see a link through to his website.
Can you just give us your website for our listeners?
Yeah? Our website is www.safermedicines.org.
Because obviously I went onto this page, obviously this is how I found you. And the interesting thing is, obviously, you were saying that obviously animal rights are not what you're fighting for.
No.
But it is nonetheless interesting that there is a link on your website, I think, to a conference or something that has happened a while back. And on that page, it really says that 92% of animal tests are virtually useless. So you're up against an industry that wants people to believe otherwise, and are probably not as open towards you saying, you know, we have to explore other ways.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. I'm glad you mentioned the conference. We ran a groundbreaking conference ourselves a couple of years ago at the Royal Society in London, really prestigious institution, and we had eminent scientific speakers from all over the world came to it. It was a very well attended, lively conference. We had politicians, MPs there speaking on our behalf and in support of what we were saying, but you're absolutely right that we have serious opposition from government and from industry. But interestingly, the figure you gave of 92%, that figure is from the FDA, that's the American Food and Drug Administration.
Okay, now, okay. Right. So they're admitting it at least.
not exactly, but they're, well, yeah, kind of. They are the largest drug regulatory agency in the world, and nowadays all pharmaceutical companies are multinational, and so you have to please the FDA. You have to get past the FDA's regulations if you want to market your drug. And as I've mentioned, before any drug can be marketed and sold publicly, it's got to go through human clinical trials. And before it goes through human clinical trials, it goes through testing in the lab.
So oftentimes, is it then basically because it's a requirement that it gets done?
Yes.
Because I don't think anyone really can understand if it is sort of a well-known fact that it doesn't really work that well, yet it's being done for at least 50 years, that doesn't really make sense, does it?
It doesn't, and the astonishing thing was, even 50 years ago when it was mandated, in order, you know, the intention was good, the intention was to try and prevent another drug disaster like thalidomide from ever happening again. But the weird thing was that thalidomide had been tested very extensively on animals, and the problems, the birth defects, hadn't shown up. And so thalidomide is an excellent example of the failure of animal testing. And then it's quite bizarre that that animal tests became mandated to another thalidomide. Now,
and so what's your recommendation then?
So the law at the moment, just to tell people what the 92% was about, the law at the moment is that you have to do animal tests before you go into human trials, and that's where the 92% figure comes in, because 92%, just being slightly more than 9 out of 10, that's the number of drugs that fail in human clinical trials after they've been through years of extensive animal testing.
And they have to be basically signed off. They can't, if I get that right, before you can actually test them on humans, they would have to be signed off, wouldn't it? They would have to say, well, you can't see anything.
Nobody says that you get complete proof of safety from the animals, but what you're supposed to be getting is confidence that these drugs are safe enough to try out in humans. So you test them in, the legal requirement is two species of animals, one rodent and one non-rodent. So it has to be a mouse or a rat, for example, and then a dog or a monkey. And very often it'll be all four of those species and others as well. And yet, as we know from the infamous clinical trial at Northwick Park Hospital a few years ago, that was in 2006, this was there was a new drug, and it went into six healthy young men, volunteers, in the clinical trial. And it was given to them because it had been tested in monkeys, and this was after testing other animals as well, but it had been tested in monkeys at huge doses, shown to be completely safe, so in that regard, much like thalidomide, looked really, really safe in animals. So everybody declared that it was perfectly safe enough to try it out in humans. And then, of course, all six of the volunteers went into complete multiple organ failure, were rushed into intensive care, nearly died, all of them nearly died, had very serious side effects. And this was completely unexpected and unpredicted by the animal tests. And everybody immediately was saying that this was a failure of animal testing.
They used the wrong monkeys, see?
Exactly. And they were admitting that the animal tests created a false sense of security, which is absolutely what they did. But then, people try and backtrack after that and say, we should have used other species of animals. We should have done...
Because the other argument that we often hear is, for instance, let's just say 95% of all the test animals in the UK are rats. So that's the majority of animals that are being tested on. And there are people that, that say, maybe we should really only test on primates and monkeys and apes because they're so much more like us.
Yes.
But apparently, even though it was still tested, from ethical point of view, but let's just say it were through this case, then shows that this may not be the case.
No, that's right. It's really interesting. I mean, it's an obvious thing to think is that monkeys would give the most reliable results because they're the most closely related to us. But it just doesn't work out that way at all. If you think of malaria, which is a disease that kills millions of humans every year, monkeys, chimpanzees even, don't suffer from malaria. Same with AIDS. Here's a major disease for humanity, which monkeys and apes appear to be quite immune to. And they're just not a good model. In fact, governments have stopped using chimpanzees for research into heart disease and cancer, which are the major killers of people, because they're such poor models.
Yeah. The idea then would be... on one side, they're frantically looking for species to be tested on. We also know, obviously, that when it comes to the industry, there's some money in it.
Yes.
When you look at the UK, and I'm just a blown in, but when you look at the UK, and you have 500 beagles dying every day at Huntington Life Science, and being bred for that purpose of being tested on, nobody would do this if there wasn't any money in it. When you look at the figures and they were saying us testing on animals creates income, therefore the economy, blah, 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 is better. So you have more than just people that would say animal tests do work. And even if they don't work, so far it seems to be, like I said, it's the norm, it's a requirement.
That's right.
Unless the government really agrees to go different ways, and I know there's a bill out there that we're going to talk about in a minute, but let's just say the people would become intelligent overnight. Sorry, I have to be a bit sarcastic sometimes. But let's just say people would say, yeah, it doesn't make sense, we have to stop it. Because, I still believe, especially when they all claim how intelligent we are, maybe we are better than that. And maybe we should start thinking of other ways since people die in their millions of cancer. They would then ask, okay, if we don't have the animals anymore, because it's not reliable, let's just forget about the whole ethical thing. It's just not reliable, so it's not a good way of testing.
Sure.
What would you test on?
Well, I'm so glad that you asked that, because this is our point. I mean, society is very wedded to using animals, and... in the past, there may have been some truth in the excuse that we didn't have anything else, but that excuse has long gone because we now have a whole number of exciting amazing new technologies that are based on human biology that can give us answers to questions about the way the human body will react to new medicines and to diseases that animals just never will be able to give you. Mm. And so there's really sophisticated new technology.
So is this stem cells and is this computer technology?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, if you're testing a new drug, the first thing you would do is computer technology or testing chemical structures against known databases and libraries of chemical structures. But it gets much, much more sophisticated than that. There are now models of human organs on computer, like a beating human heart, that you can inject with various drugs and chemicals and see the effect on an actual human heart.
And nobody gets injured.
Absolutely, and you can replay it again and again. And so certainly computer models are one piece of the jigsaw. A very important piece is human cells and human tissues grown in the lab in vitro, in flasks or in test tubes. But they've become very much more sophisticated than they ever used to be, so that now you grow them in three-dimensional cultures, and you even can grow them on scaffolds so that they're much more like a real whole organ than just a flat layer of cells in a dish. And you get much better results that way. And you can use primary human tissues. That means tissues that's come straight from a donor. These can be donors who've died and given their consent for organ donation and tissue donation. But it can be from living donors. It can be from cosmetic surgery, all sorts of surgery. There's a lot of waste tissue that comes out. And this tissue is incredibly valuable, and the tragedy is that most of it is incinerated in hospitals. When actually it's a tremendously valuable resource for research, and if people would be asked for their consent, nearly everybody would give their consent. We know this from huge surveys. And then there'd be huge amounts of human tissue. Lung tissue could be used to test aerosols and drugs that are to be inhaled. Obviously, plenty of skin tissue for testing things that you'd apply to the skin. And then tissues of all the internal organs and blood can be used for testing all sorts of other drugs. Mm. So that's really important. And then a very exciting new technology is called microdosing, and this involves actual human volunteers, but it's much, much less risky than if you were a volunteer in a clinical trial. Right. At the moment, if you volunteered for a clinical trial, like the poor six guys at Northwick Park Hospital, the risk is unknown. Actually, you are the first human guinea pigs that are taking a new drug, and everybody kind of hopes it's safe, and everybody thinks that it's safe because it looks safe in animals, but actually nobody's got the faintest idea. And so what we're calling for is, before you ever do that, you should try out new drugs in microdosing, as well as in human tissues and computer models and DNA chips, and make sure it's really looking safe on the basis of these human-based tests before you give it to volunteers. So microdosing is very, very much safer because you take a tiny dose, a nanogram dose. It's such a minuscule amount, it's almost guaranteed to be safe. No 100% guarantee, of course.
Yeah, well, but, you know, when people always say, I need a guarantee, you know, I think that's just crazy, you know.
Yeah.
There are no guarantees in life, you know.
No, that's right. And so you take this tiny dose of the drug, and it's not going to have a pharmacological effect because the dose is too small.
Yeah.
But then you're monitored by scanners, incredibly sensitive scanners now. There's an AMS scanner, and it's the most sensitive measuring device that's ever been invented. It can count individual atoms. Interestingly, it was originally invented for carbon dating. So for tiny samples
bones
of...
stuff, yeah.
Yeah, historical art. That's right, and it smashes the atoms to smithereens, and you can count them and work out the age. And
so, the technology is there. The problem is if it's not done across the board, I think it's probably rather expensive to have in the first place.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of your concern, isn't it? Because obviously you can't even ring a hospital and say, did you do surgery this morning? Can we have the tissue?
Ah, no, well, that's right. I mean, there are increasing numbers of tissue banks now, but the government does need to step in and simplify the rules and the regulations and also...
Because apparently, I mean, your hardest battle, really, is the political one.
Absolutely. I mean, there is no scientific issue now. The reason we are still animal testing is not scientific, it is political. We do now have methods that could be used that look very, very like they would be much more safe and accurate and effective.
It's also so nice to hear that from a scientist than just from a guy like me, you know. So, because we were saying this, you know, a lot of people obviously who really don't know the score just throw things back at you.
That's right.
And then the whole anthropomorphism angle comes in, and people think, if you had your way, blah blah blah. You know,
I understand that absolutely, and that's I'm a geneticist by training, and we have a lot of science advisors who are very eminent scientists with distinguished careers in biomedicine, and their concerns over animal testing are because they've seen firsthand how irrelevant and misleading it can be. I mean, they're not opposed to all use of animals in science per se, they're absolutely not, but they do have very serious concerns about how patients can be harmed when scientists rely on the results of animal tests instead of relying on human tissues, human volunteers, all the other things that we can do these days. And so all that we're asking for, we're not calling for animal tests to be banned, and you'll understand why there's no need to do that when I explain what we are calling for. All we're calling on the government to do is a quick, cheap, simple comparison of animal tests, the ones that are currently required by law, with a whole bunch of the latest human biology-based tests that we're advocating, and see which ones would be better at predicting the safety of new medicines.
So you're confident that obviously your method would be the more effective one?
Yeah,
Because at the end of the day, that would help my kind to achieve the goal.
Absolutely.
Because it's interesting when you talk to scientists, in my mind, I always felt that medicine is something that comes from the East, and a plant should be really... I just had a computer crash, and then my computer said that Casey was actually offline, which she wasn't, so there's something wrong there. we try our luck, we don't know how long this goes on for, but you were basically saying before we went off there that... what you are really calling for is testing your methods against animal testing, animal tests, finding out which ones are more accurate, and then really using them. And you're confident that the way to go is what you do.
That's right. We're just calling for a comparison, and so it's completely fair and reasonable, and we can't see that anybody could object to it.
But apparently. Some people might still object to it because obviously there is a bill out there, but it's not like everybody signs it.
No, that's right. It's called the Safety of Medicines Bill, and there's a parliamentary petition so that MPs can support it. That's called an early day motion, and nearly 150 MPs have already signed up to it, which is tremendous. But of course, we'd like an awful lot more.
How many people do you need?
Well, just as many as possible. Sadly, it won't achieve anything. Nothing will automatically happen. Even if every MP in the House signed up to it. Early day motions don't have any real authority. What they do is show the strength of feeling in Parliament on an issue.
And would it be possible for, let's say, our listeners to say, I pester my MP to sign it?
Absolutely, yes, please. We really would like all listeners to help with this.
After all, that's what we're known for, you know? Us animal rights people, we're so annoying.
No, that's great. We want everybody to call their MP and ask them to sign Early Day Motion 475, Safety of Medicines. You can go to our website, safermedicines.org, to find out if your MP has already signed. I mean, if they have already signed, it's always nice to thank them. But if they haven't signed, you can write to them or email them. But we've got ready-made postcards, so you can get a postcard from us. You can order it on the website, or you can phone us up on 0208 265 2880 and order a free postcard, which we'll send to you with some background information. And then all you need to do is sign it and stick a stamp on it and send it off to you.
Yeah, so that's good. So you're helping people along the way. So that's good. I was just saying before I lost the connection is that when I was younger, obviously, or still today, I actually think that my idea always about medicine is that most medicine derived from plants. Apparently, yet I don't see anyone out there in the rainforest checking all up on those plants. So your methods by default are still quite Western. How much impact does have Eastern plants in medicine these days?
There is, actually. It's interesting that you say that. There are companies that are in the rainforest testing their way through things as quickly as they can. Many exciting new compounds are discovered from rainforest plants and from corals and from the sea, from seaweeds and all sorts of things. They're anti-cancer agents called taxanes are all derived from yew trees, and of course aspirin is probably the most widely used medicine in the world, was derived from willow bark.
Yeah, but obviously the last thing that I read is obviously only 1% of the plants in the rainforest are actually checked. You know, so probably it's a manpower thing, or I don't know.
Yeah, sure, and a lot of them are declining and disappearing before they've ever even been recorded or catalogued. You know, we're losing things so fast that we lose them before we've ever even identified them, which is absolutely tragic, of course. But there is overwhelming evidence that patients are injured and killed as a direct consequence of animal testing. Every year, 1 million Britons are hospitalised by side effects of prescription medicines. This costs the NHS £2 billion a year.
Yeah.
And we're not saying that all of this is the fault of animal testing, of course. There's a number of reasons for it, but we think that animal testing is an important factor because it is, today, it is the main safety screen before medicines go into human clinical trials.
I think it must be also incredibly frustrating that, you know, the animals being tested on for 5 decades or whatever, or even longer, and it doesn't seem like we have achieved all that much. I mean, you know, no. We're still dying of cancer and all that kind of stuff. How much in your work, everybody goes on about people dying because of stress or stress-related illnesses. How can they measure it, really? Is that something you take into account, that obviously we're a different generation than the ones before?
Gosh, that's a tricky one.
I thought I'm not going too easy on you now.
Well, and it changes. For example, people have thought for many years that things like stomach ulcers were caused by stress, and certainly stress is probably a factor in it, but it was shown a few years ago by a doctor in Australia called Barry Marshall that most stomach ulcers are actually caused by a bacterial infection, Helicobacter pylori. Now, he was ridiculed. This is really interesting because he had this theory that Helicobacter pylori was causing stomach ulcers. But animal testing disputed that, and so he was ridiculed by the scientific establishment. And the only way to test out his theory was to swallow the bacteria himself, which is exactly what he did. He swallowed a culture of nasty bacteria, got himself a stomach ulcer, became very, very ill, cured himself with antibiotics, and then won a Nobel Prize for it a few years later. And this is very much the story of medicine. Much of it is serendipity. Many of our medicines have been discovered by accident.
And that's the other thing that we always say, like, you know, it's not the medicine's fault that they work.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, in many ways. But that's the surprising thing, because obviously, you know, you spend a lifetime in these jobs, you know, testing out your theories and studying so much. Yet it's really, a lot of this is really chance. So why is it so difficult? Is it because you don't really have the models?
Yes, I think that, yes, developing new medicines, for example, is painfully slow. It takes many years. It takes about 15 years to bring a new drug to market. There's so many tests to go through. And animal tests are very, very slow. They can take months or years. And this is a very exciting thing about these new technologies that we're advocating. They're so much quicker. The computer-based tests, you can do them in a matter of minutes or hours rather than days, weeks, months and years. Yeah, I mean, the tests in human cells and human tissues generally take a matter of days rather than the months or even years that they would take in animals. And so what we're proposing would speed up drug development enormously, and of course that would slash the costs dramatically as well, because the costs are enormous, and every extra day that you don't go to market, apparently you lose $1 billion. And so we're talking about huge savings in time and money, and most importantly of all, making sure that medicines are safe for the species that they're designed for.
Yeah.
And now that we can do this, now that we have the technologies that allow us to test medicines in humans safely for humans, then why on earth are we still testing them on different species? It makes no sense at all.
But it seems to be quite difficult, because obviously when you say it, it makes perfect sense. Yet obviously, you know, once something is established, it just doesn't go away overnight.
That's right. I mean, it's a habit. It's very difficult to break habits.
Yeah. I'm a chocolate addict, so I understand what you're saying there.
And you can appreciate the government's position. I mean, the government is charged with protecting the public, and it is their responsibility to make sure they're using the best tests possible to protect people. And they seem to really believe that that's what they're doing. And
I mean, with regards to the government, you know, I think we could do a show just on that.
Absolutely.
For instance, one of the surprising things that we had lately is that, you know, that many people for years would say, I worked with Concern, the NGO, for a few years back, and they were saying back then, you know, if you would feed the grains directly rather than feeding all the cattle, starving would go down, and now 5 years after they said it, the United Nations says maybe we should have meat-free Mondays.
Absolutely, and I think that's where we're at. It's taken so many years for people to agree with that argument. I mean, you've known it, and I've known it for decades, and now we hear governments agreeing with us at long last.
So at least there's hope.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I think what's going to drive this more than anything, this switch from using animals in biomedical research to going down the human biology-based route, I think what's going to drive that is economics, because the pharmaceutical industry is in crisis. And one of the reasons, well, the main reason they're in crisis is because it takes so long to develop new drugs, and then more than nine out of ten of them, fail. So they lose billions of pounds when that happens.
And they should automatically then be on your side, you know?
Absolutely. It's in their interests to develop faster, cheaper, better tests, and that's what we're proposing: faster, cheaper, better tests.
Because I don't trust the the computer because we had a crash here. So on your website, safermedicines.org, people can see the bill 475 and ask their MP to sign it.
Please do.
That's
please
all
do.
On your website.
Absolutely, yeah. And we'd love to help. I mean, email us, info@safermedicines.org, phone us up, contact us through the website.
That was actually quite quick, you know. I just inquired, with a receptionist, and she said, "Oh, we're not animal rights people." I said, "Oh, no." Hang on a second there, you know, we're not all alike. I don't know, we have such a bad reputation, you know. Anyway, but that was funny. I mean, you agreed quite quickly, and that was really good, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's a problem for us. I mean, our opposition would like to dismiss us by pretending that we're some kind of animal rights organisation. So that's why we're always very keen to point out that we're not.
Having said that, you know, having a little bit of compassion and knowing when to stop is in essence a good thing. So I think you know we have loads of the same goals, you know, because I mean, you know, if I can take medication that's safer to take, you know, I would too.
Absolutely.
You know, so I think probably, you know, we're still more like and unlike, and obviously when people say that, you know, we have our stereotypical ideas of what an animal rights activist is, you know. In the same way, people have a very fixed idea of what a scientist is.
Sure.
One of my listeners, when I told them that I do this interview, said, ask them if they all are big fans of Dr. McCoy and Star Trek. So I'm asking you now, are you a big Trekkie?
I'm not. My husband is, but I'm not.
Okay. And is he from the medical profession too?
No, he's not. No, he's a conservationist.
Okay, well, you know, see? There you go. But it's interesting how we think that, you know, everybody just sits there, you know, that's how we envision this in the future. You know, everybody watches Star Trek 4. Where he gives a pill to someone and it grows a new kidney or something, you know, really funny stuff. But anyway, it might happen in the future. Who knows?
Yeah, absolutely. And our organisation is a very broad church, a very eclectic mix of different types of scientists. But the one thing that we all have in common is a belief that the best model for humans, for human disease, or for human drug testing is human, and I think that's a non-controversial thing that that everybody ought to agree with.
I can just envision a little fraction of society, you know, saying, "Oh, you know, if it's grown in a lab, it's still alive." And do you have that sometimes that people say, you know, this unchristian of what you do? Do you have people that have a mindset like this and say, you know, you're testing on something that's, again, not ethical?
Well, some people, of course, religious people, have often have a problem with embryonic stem cells, and we do think that stem cell research is incredibly exciting and offers huge promise for the future of medicine. Of course, we appreciate the ethical concerns about embryonic stem cells, but nowadays there are many, many ways around that, and it's really exciting. In fact, the most exciting stem cells of the moment are something called induced pluripotent stem cells. Now, these are generally taken from skin. If you're a patient with a nasty disease, for example, motor neurone disease, you can give a tiny little scrape of skin, and scientists can extract stem cells from that skin, turn them back into any specialised type of cell of the body, for example, heart cells or neurons, the cells of the nervous system, and they will come from you. They will have your DNA in, so they will have your genetic defect that causes your motor neurone disease. But these are cells that can be grown indefinitely in a dish and tested in all sorts of ways. You can do horrible things to them, you know.
Yeah, but you also, in theory, you could restore. Let's just say I'm a type 1 diabetic for 19 years, so you could restore probably my health without having to clone me.
Absolutely, absolutely. So it's really exciting, and stem cells are, I'm sure, the way forward for many aspects.
Yeah. But because it's important to sort of explore that briefly, because surprisingly, because obviously you are in a laboratory. That's how people envision you, sort of locked away, you know. So people obviously think, you know, that you are probably as fanatic as some animal rights activists are being seen.
Well,
you know, I'm just saying it, you know. So I think we all have our little ideas, though. So, but you are quite down to earth.
Yes. No, I do understand that, and I think you know, scientists need to do a better job of explaining more clearly what they're doing, and especially I think a lot of controversy about stem cells is lack of proper education about them, and you know, people do need to know that there's lots of other things than embryonic stem cells, and nobody can object to those. There is no ethical objection to induced pluripotent stem cells at all. It's completely exciting and positive, and offers a move away from animal testing. So it's something that everybody should really welcome.
And obviously, and we welcome it too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have a bit of a spiritual disposition sometimes, which basically means that I just, you know, all the suffering that it basically happens, you know, I think has probably an effect on the planet.
Yes.
You know, so I do believe that. I'm not, you know, not going overboard here, but I personally think, you know, there must be something to that.
Yes.
Too, you know, because obviously it's not a positive environment when you have to test on someone and not saying something, you know, that feels pain.
And that's very important, that what we're not proposing is to test things on humans rather than animals. Absolutely not at all.
Yeah.
We want to protect volunteers and patients in clinical trials better than their current.
That's the other thing that some people have already in forums suggested. Say, take all the pedophiles, take all the people that are imprisoned. So again, there's a group of people that are then stigmatized and seen as less. And they test, you know, when you look at, so me being German, when you look at my history, that has been done.
Yes, and I find it astonishing that people can still make such sick suggestions, quite honestly, and that it's from ignorance. And
again, you know, they're not in it, so they know they're not being tested on. I think it's an underlying fear. I don't know, people probably watch too much Resident Evil or something.
Yeah.
No, you know, from a bloke point of view, Mila Jovovich is really beautiful, you know. But people watch this. I think, I don't know what it is. It's people, why people are so afraid of things, because change is something people embrace by and large very slowly.
Yes, but no. I mean, the exciting future of medicine is that there are ways to test things in human material outside of the living human body, so at no risk to anybody. That's got to be far better than doing it in human volunteers, and far better than doing it in animals, because they're the ones.
And do you have a time prognosis? I mean, knowing that this all takes ages, I mean, you know, change takes ages, you must have some sort of a timeline in your mind, I think, where you say, like, you know, if we get this signed and probably things change, how long do you think this will take before there will be changes made?
I think there will be big change, very big change, within 10 years. Nothing's going to be sudden or overnight or everything all in one go.
Yeah, we're used to that.
Yeah, but I think things will gradually start to happen. I think if we did get this comparison that we're calling on the government to do, if it produced clear enough evidence that we think it will, then there would be quick change. I mean, things could change overnight. It's a matter of political will rather than scientific reality. And so I think within a small number of years, there will be very big changes. And a really encouraging thing is that in America, the Environmental Protection Agency commissioned a report on testing environmental chemicals, and they produced this very groundbreaking report calling for a total move away from animal testing into in vitro tests and computational techniques, because it's faster and more effective and more relevant. It's exactly what we're calling for.
So let's just agree that in 2021 we have another conversation.
Yeah.
and see what has happened. I have to let you go now because I don't trust my computer.
Sure.
And I want to make sure that I have this interview because that was insightful. Because believe it or not, a lot of people are quite skeptical that I even talk to a scientist. But I personally think my show is an awareness raising show, and I think you know it is the conversations that we're having and the understanding that you convey and stuff that in the end will bring about the change. So
it's been great to speak to you. Just before we finish, I'd like to tell people that we have a little film, a 26-minute film on our website.
Okay. Okay, hang on a second then, hang on. Okay, tell us about the 26-minute film.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, it's been a great pleasure to speak to you. And just before we finish, I'd like to let people know that we have a 26-minute film on our website called Safer Medicines, which people can watch free on our website. Order a DVD if you'd like a better quality version, but
is it free?
It's free, yeah, you can watch.
I would want one. I before I let you go, I'd probably just email you or text you here my address.
Oh, okay, the DVD, it's free to you. It's £5 to everybody else. We offer it free to...
Thank you. That would be it's just nice to have, you know?
Yeah, okay, excellent. You know?
And I will not copy it, I promise. You heard me on air.
You know, welcome to. Copy it as widely as you can.
All right, okay.
But, yes, I mean, if anyone can get it into schools, we'd really appreciate that, and it's free for people in schools. But,
okay, that's one of the things that we're trying to do in the future is my show is called Wild Time, and I'm planning on having these Wild Time events.
Brilliant.
I have been sent a footage of a young lady who swims with sharks. And she's still around. So we're in the process of setting that up, which would just be brilliant. And we could probably do them in London because I love that city, you know, being a tourist.
Wonderful.
And you could just come along, you know.
Fantastic.
So anyway, so what is this? What does this 26 movie contain then? What is this about?
It's about the problem of side effects, how medicines today are not as safe as they should be, and how we think they could easily be made much safer. So it highlights a small number of the technologies that we're recommending, and the way that medicines should be tested in the future.
I was just thinking that's also great, you know, just as an educational tool, just like you were saying, it's just brilliant, you know, I just pass on the link and people know that it's not just my word.
Good, well, I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, I will. Okay, so people can order DVD and obviously it's just a fiver, you guys out there, so, you know, it's not too much to ask, I suppose.
No. Yeah. And, okay, well, I do hope that this all got recorded.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't know why there was this glitch there, and, you know. So I'm still glad you have Trekkie in the family. And this goes out in May, but we're recording this end of March. So if you tell your husband that Leonard Nimoy just turned 80, and on StarTrek.com, there's a three-page interview about his life in film and sort of 50 years of Spock, which is brilliant.
Thank you. How lovely. I shall go tell him.
All right, then. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you. Great stuff.
Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Yeah, and that's all we really have time for. You're listening to Wild Time, the Animal Rights / World Conservation Show with myself, Thomas Janak, here on TCR FM. That was an interview I did with Casey Archibald. And she sent me the DVD, and we are actually about to set up our first Wild Time event here in Tamworth in the youth center. And very likely it'll be in June. We're actually looking into possibilities, and the topic will be sort of a critical look into animal testing. And so we have this DVD. Then the British Union Against Vivisection promised me to send me a free CD that I can use for the event as well. And very likely John White, who has been on the show, will be giving a talk about animal tests from an ethical point of view. That's all in the making. I will tell you about this as we progress here with our ideas. Next show is on Monday, obviously. And also updates you can always find on our website, official blog, which is www.wildtimeontcifm.blogspot.com. That's wildtimeontcifm.blogspot.com. Like I said, that's all we have time for. Thank you all for listening, and make sure you are back next week. Bye-bye.